Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
Let's go on Zappos and look up Zappos and vegan, you know? And so I searched it. And of course, they come up. And then I said, let's see what you have when you search that. And it had gardening clogs. It had like a Croc shoe.
Right.
And I said, why don't you guys go look at how many people opt out after they see that? And then you might buy my shoes. And that was a Friday. And Monday, they bought 18 styles.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Rebecca Mink. Rebecca is the founder of the very first vegan luxury shoe brand, Mink Shoes. They were established in the year 2000. And this year, 2023, Rebecca is launching Mink plant-based vegan leather. She's a true pioneer in the space. Hi, it's so good to be here with you in New York.
Yeah, it's so awesome and to be here.
Thank you for making the time.
Oh,
I know you're on
goodness.
A like 2-day bender, basically.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. Every hour filled, and I left at 3 a.m. and I'm going home at midnight 2 days later.
Okay, before we start, I got to see the shoes you brought.
Yeah. This is our leather here because we had that. We have this crazy story where we created big pieces of leather for our first shoes. We're starting to make product out of our leather. So making mink shoes out of mink materials.
This is so cool.
This is big
stuff. These are stunning.
Aren't they?
Yeah. We're going to work our way up to you making your leather.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to start way back because, so a lot of people that have been on this podcast, I always ask, not always, but usually ask people like how, when, why do they become vegetarian then vegan? But I've never heard of anyone who was quite as young as you.
Yes.
Will you tell that story?
It's such an incredible situation. I really understood clearly what I understand today at 4 years old. So I was 4 years old, and the story that was my aha moment at 4 years old was that I was at a birthday party, like a barbecue, you know, in the backyard. And a typical birthday barbecue at that time, people were having hot dogs, right? And so this little boy that I was eating a hot dog with on a little bench. I remember it so clearly. And he said, hot dogs are made out of dogs. And I said, wait, what? And I started to realize that it was called a hot dog. So maybe it's made out of dogs. And I'm like, that's wrong. And then my whole world changed forever. And then I was in a situation where I'm at 4 years old, my parents couldn't get me to eat anything unless they would show me exactly where it came from.
Wow.
and how it was grown. Or I would sit at the dinner table forever and I would, you know, flush it down the toilet, go to the bathroom. I'd do anything I could, you know, to not eat any meat at all or not eat anything that I didn't know where it was from.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty.
So you were on it.
Yeah, we both said at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, I was really stubborn. And my parents were British. They came from England on the Queen Elizabeth boat to the East Coast. And then we had moved to California. And they were just like, what is happening to our daughter?
And there probably weren't a lot of other kids at the time.
There was not.
No.
There was none. And so my parents, you know, they had to change. I remember the moment that it happened for them. They took me to the zoo. And crazy as that is, how ironic, right? Because they knew that they could get me to eat something if I was going to go see the animals. And so they had me eat a piece of fish that I didn't know what it was. And I kept it in my mouth because I didn't know what it was and I wasn't going to swallow it. We went on this tram ride and the whole ride is, you know, pretty long in a zoo. And then we come out and I got stung by a bee on my lip. at the end. And as I got stung by this bee, this fish starts coming out of my mouth. I don't know if it was attracted to the fish or something. And my parents were just like, wow, she just held fish in her mouth for like hours. On the way home, I remember them saying, we're just going to have to like go to a health food store and figure out how to like get some food in her.
Incredible. And I'm sure like that was a big deal. But I'm sure then your parents were like, what the hell do we do?
Yeah, they thought it was going to stunt my growth. Yeah. And they were British, meat and potatoes.
Right.
So guess what happened?
What?
I have siblings in.
How many?
Three. And pretty soon, guess what happened? They all wanted to eat my special food. So all the siblings became vegetarian.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's so incredible. And did your parents?
No, they didn't. But now they pretty much are. They really don't go for any meat anymore. So.
And so somehow this was, did you, like this was your, you knew that young, that you're, it's not shocking that your life's path became doing work in this.
Yeah.
World,
I mean, when right? I was 5 years old, I wrote to Santa and said I wanted $1 million in a shoe store. Not much has changed.
You really knew who you were.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Really crazy, right?
Yeah. So let's kind of fast forward then.
Yeah.
So you started out, your career started as a stylist.
Well, first I was doing modeling.
Okay.
So I was pretty bored in that career and I was making good money. And then I found out the styling, you know, I could make even more money. So, and also it was very creative for me. It was a creative outlet and I was able to work with big names and a very young age and get into wardrobe styling to celebrities. Okay. I was buying $25,000, $30,000 of leather shoes a month for these clients. And I was sick over it. I was walking into the shoe department and Neiman Marcus and getting the best of this and best of that. Then I was walking into, you know, all, you know, Barney's back in the day and just really shopping and buying things that I didn't believe in. And I could do everything except for the shoes vegan, everything. I could even get away with certain belts, metal belts, different things, but I could not put someone on the red carpet in what we had at that time, which was Payless.
Yes, it was. And it was ugly and it was super plastic and hard.
Yeah. Plastic. And, you know, I mean, we really had no option at all.
And what about you? You were vegan.
Yes, I was wearing leather shoes because I was, you know, I got some leftovers that were beautiful and I'm a big heel lover and I was wearing shoes that, you know, I didn't believe in. I really had no option for different events. And so I wanted to do something about that.
And did you have clients that wanted vegan?
Yeah. Pamela Anderson was a long-term client of mine. We were so funny on set because it was like, no one knew like how to feed us. she was definitely awesome because back then she really was. And even Michael Bolton is vegetarian and I was on the road with him too. That's two vegetarians I actually ended up working with at that time. I really had a really great time working with all these people, but it was really not right that I was buying leather shoes. So there we have it.
And so you said, well, I'm going to make
What I did is I did something real crazy. I said, well, I'm going to make the best in the world. If I'm going to make it, I'm not going to make what we already have. And I'm not going to wear, you know, make something you're going to wear at the grocery store or anything. I'm going to go for the red carpet. I'm going to go for the shoe that I cannot find for myself, for my clients, for this, you know, luxury level of fashion piece, something that was really special. So I went to Italy, of course.
Good idea.
Yeah, good idea. And I got lots of doors slammed in my face. So the first thing that happened was that the factories really did not have the ability to understand what I was doing. They thought I was making a cheap shoe because it wasn't leather.
This is like 20 years ago too, just to
22 years ago.
Wow. So really no one was doing this.
They really didn't understand. Yeah. And so they walked me the door and they're like, if you're not going to use my cousin's tannery, I'm not going to make your shoes. So they were very connected also to the leather industry, a lot of the factories. And so I worked tirelessly going to Italy for a year and a half, really looking for the right person to work with. And it was a woman, of course, a female owned factory. And now we part own that factory. If you fast forward 15, 16 years, but we basically were in a situation where I came across this woman that said, I'm going to try to make these shoes. I'm going to try to figure this out with you.
when you met her, she was making animal leather shoes. So.
Yes. She okay. makes Christian Louboutin, Chanel, Jimmy Choo, Dolce & Gabbana, Gucci, all the
and
best.
She wanted to just take this risk. Yeah.
She wanted to figure out how to do this with me. And we've got a close bond. And then when someone was retiring in her factory later, we Mink purchased part of the factory. So we're partners.
So you guys
now.
Are partners for life.
Yeah, we are.
But how cool it was a woman that you started this with.
She really understood. And now she has a daughter that I watched grow up who's in her late 20s, who's now running the factory. So and then we have a female in the offices running the offices. So we're all female. Run factory. It's immaculate, gorgeous, and run well.
I love it. Okay, yeah. So you two meet. She says, yes, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And then how do you do this? What are you even
first
using as material?
First thing is leather, right? The first thing I had to do is figure out. So what happened in my life was the happy accident that 20 years later I started, you know, creating this plant-based leather is because the first thing I did is start studying and trying to figure out sourcing materials that were non-leather that were going to work for shoes. And of course, in Italy, they're like, no, this isn't going to work. And so you have to talk them into testing them. And it was just a process. To be able to have them go through that with you and have the shoe break. Because one thing I would really like everyone to know is that the hardest thing that you can do on a material is make a shoe. And that is because a shoe is made in 30 different factories. What we part own is a mounting factory where the magic happens, where it all comes together. But a shoe, if you look at a shoe on your foot right now and you think about it, there's a sole factory, there's a heel factory, there's an insole, there's all different types of components you can't see. There's the upper is sewn, then there's laces, there's grommets, there's all kinds of pieces. So it's not just one item. So I have to figure out the whole thing.
And a lot of those items were animal.
Yeah,
right?
Mainly the upper, of course, the leather. But then there's inside of the shoe, there's things that give the strength and hold. If you can see at the back, or if you think of just, if you're listening, a pump, you know how it has that structure.
Yeah.
There inside, internally, there was like a compacted leather in a lot of them as well.
So what did you guys come up with?
So here's what happened. So we started making some fun materials that were, I mean, the first of their kind. And one of the things in a shoe is you can't have a loose weave, right? It's going to grow in size.
Right.
So a lot of the recycled materials that we could find that were ready available, because they were recycled, they were so worked over in a way that they were so porous and gummy that it wasn't going to work for a shoe. So that's why we started to create our own materials as well. And so we created a paper material that was really fun. And then we created recycled plastic bottle materials and different things. And all of that was awesome, but we really wanted to invent something, which is what we did later.
You come back, you have this shoe brand now.
Yeah.
You have all these clients.
Yeah, well, you know what? Then the stores didn't want to buy the vegan shoes. You know, there was another barrier that really hit me for a good, you know, amount of time.
And what was there?
Well, you could go to a buyer of a store, right? There's two problems that the buyer had. Number one, a vegan shoe, just period, a vegan shoe.
And well, the reputation at the time too.
Yeah.
Was payless.
Luxury to, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And why is it costing the same amount or different things? And so there was all these things that came up. And I have a really fun story about Zappos, actually. I went to them 8 times. Because they sold the most shoes in the world. And I'm a businesswoman, right? So I'm like, I'm going to sell to Zappos because they sell the most shoes in the world. And it was, you know, it was 2011, I think. And so I met with them. And their system is set so that you can't get your way in, you know, to get that final buy, right? And so I finally get to my one buyer and she's going to meet me in Las Vegas. And I didn't want to fly with my samples and put them under the plane. So I drove my samples and myself out to Vegas. And I had to stay the night because my appointment was 11 in the morning. I stay the night. I go to this appointment so excited. And I'm setting up in the conference room. And as I'm setting up, they come in. They said, oh, you know, the buyer can't meet with you today. And I just looked at them and I said, is this buyer in the building? And they said, why? Yes. And I said, well, I'm not leaving this building until they come in here and talk to me. So I'll sit in here all day and I'm sure they'll have a few moments. And they were just like, wait, what? Okay. She's not going to leave. And so I said, I won't leave. And then when they came in, it still wasn't over. I finally got them to come in and they came in and they said, they literally threw one of the shoes on the table and they said, why is this more expensive? Why is this the same price? Why is this different than something made in China that we already have that's, you know, that's plastic, you know, whatever. Right. And I said, you know what? I'll tell you why. And I pulled my computer out and I said, let's go on Zappos and look up Zappos and vegan, you know? And so I searched it. And of course they come up and then I said, let's see what you have when you search that. And it had gardening clogs. It had like a Croc shoe.
Right.
And I said, why don't you guys go look at how many people opt out after they see that? And then you might buy my shoes. And that was a Friday. And Monday they bought 18 styles.
Wow. That whole story is so crazy for so many reasons.
Yeah.
But also, like the limited imagination going on at the time.
The founder, Tony Hsieh, he later I became friends with him. He's passed now, but I became friends with him in working with them, and he believed in what I was doing.
Right.
But the system, yes.
And they were how people thought about vegan shoes even 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
15 years ago.
Yeah. And so then they didn't know what to do once they put them up on the site. And then they had to create a vegan section for it.
But now if you go on Zappos now in 2022 and you put vegan in the search
box.
They have a whole section.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like there's thousands of, you know,
I can take some cred for that.
Yeah, you did it. You started it. You were the pioneer.
Yeah, because
on
I was
Zappos.
Just really, I was really adamant that they needed to have this option available if they really were going to offer all shoes.
So you get this call on Monday. And what you do, that's awesome.
It's so exciting. But then as an entrepreneur, of course, you're all excited and you think, oh, wow, that's what I really wanted. Then I had to come up with a couple $100,000 to make the shoes because they pay 90-day net. And I was like, are you kidding me? So then I had to, you know, be a fundraiser to make that all happen. And I did it. I borrowed some money from a friend. I made the shoes and then I paid them back and I made nothing on my first round. But I made it happen.
But you did it. And you proved your theory.
Delivered on time.
I'm sure once people saw other people in them, more people wanted them.
Yeah. And that's why. But then I ended up, you know, really selling direct to consumer after all of this energy going out, because it just became a better way for us to access our clients. And, you know, and all of the social networking came, you know, really heavy, and it was easy to access, you know, your own clients.
Do you have clients who've been with you since the beginning?
Yeah.
That's really
so
cool.
Fun. One time I was in New York at an event and I had mink belt, mink bag, mink shoes. And she goes, oh my gosh, you're wearing mink. She goes, it's so hard to get. She'd been buying the product for like 15 years. I have, I went to another event once and I saw someone and she said, oh, I'm still wearing those shoes. And I said, do you realize that those shoes are 19 years old? And she's like, what? And, you know, they're timeless, a lot of our shoes.
So. And they're stunning.
But you know what? I didn't like the material still all these years. And I just really wasn't happy. We still had, you know, all these new ones coming out. I won't mention any names, but I wouldn't use them. So we basically started to figure out a way to invent our own material.
Which is?
Yes. It's not done alone. I went to a university in Milan, the best for material science, and I had a very open-minded genius. I call him the Leonardo of material. He is just exceptional. He comes from plastic for 20 years, and he was trying to figure out ways to make non-plastic, knowing plastic so well. And he had spent 10 years specifically working on using upcycled fruit and vegetables. And so he was looking at the unedible fruit and vegetable waste and looking at ways to create materials with it. He was actually looking at packaging at the time when I met him, and packaging needs to be free and thrown away. So he was really excited, and we were perfect match made in heaven, and we wrote a patent together. The process of what we're doing is extremely different from what everyone else is doing, because we're not using any plastic at all.
If you're not using any plastic, what keeps it from falling apart?
We're allowing nature to be itself. So basically, if you think about an olive, you think about a tomato, you think about a mango, you think about an avocado, you think about all of these beautiful surfaces that already are waterproof, already are strong, already have this natural ability to be leather-like. And so what we do is we work directly with the plant and we preserve it. So we do not, like, what happens with the others is that they just demolish the fruit or vegetable and use the fiber, right? So they're just using the fiber and mixing it with plastic. You can get a strong material, sure. But what we're doing is we're actually allowing it to reform. So we're bonding it with some secret stuff. Yeah. And then it forms itself again, and we're mixing them. So we're not using just one fruit or vegetable. So each fruit or vegetable might have a better attribute than the other for something. And we're have a chemistry kitchen where we're mixing them to create the perfect combinations.
Will other people be able to use this for things other than shoes?
Yes. We're going to also sell it business to business to other businesses. And we're excited about going for shoes first, because one of the facts that's really important for people to understand is that 47% of leather is consumed by shoes. And okay, I could
first
say
of all, everybody
twice.
Owns way too many shoes.
Yeah. Because you think about it, it's if you look around any room or anywhere you are, pretty much the only leather that most people will have on is shoes.
Yeah.
And so it's consuming an awful lot. And what we are best, and you know, we're experts in shoes, right? So
for sure.
This is an awesome transition for us to sell to other shoe companies and other, you know, brands. You know, in our factory, we make Gucci, let's say, and we should be talking to them about now using our materials.
Oh, for sure.
So.
Is it out yet? Like, or could you sell it today? Okay.
Not yet. We're still in optimizing different colors, different textures, different things. I'm raising Series A right now, which is really exciting, so that we can build out this pilot lab. And now we've invented our patent in materials science, so it can scale in a textile mill, making our own materials as we scale up in 2024.
If what's available, you don't like it, you're like, I'll invent it. Like, this is your theme, right?
I know. I know. It's funny. It really is true, because I made a product that wasn't there. Then I made a product to make the product with.
Right. You've been in Italy, and in the leather capital of the world.
Yeah.
For 20 years. While this, and really a lot of this hasn't even come to light for most mainstream people yet. Mm-hmm. It's getting there. Mm-hmm. But being there 20 years ago, where everyone was shutting their doors in your face, are people getting more excited?
It's incredible. I mean, it really is. I mean, not only do I have awesome, you know, other textile companies that I'm meeting constantly that are doing similar things or different things that are really cool. And I really feel like, you know, I watched the whole thing happen in a way where it was, you know, first in 2008, I think, is when really people started doing like LEED certified buildings, and like, I don't know when exactly, Prius cars were happening, and like everybody was like, oh, we're going to care, you know? And then it kind of died off, I think, a little bit. There was a lot of greenwashing. People got tired of it.
I think that's what happened though with the greenwashing.
Yeah.
People didn't know what to think or believe anymore. And so they just zoned it out.
Yeah. And then it became annoying. And so it just, you know, quieted down. But I was still going along. And my whole purpose was to shift the paradigm of the way people think. You know, people think that leather shoes are nice, really good quality, really fancy and high fashion. And the other are not.
But I do think we will get to a point in our lifetimes where people think leather shoes, that's somebody's skin. I do think that that consciousness will change.
I think where, so.
Because they'll be such incredible, like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Solutions will come in and—
Just take them to a tannery.
Right? I mean—
Take them to a slaughterhouse.
I wish we could, right? But I think once solutions start, like what your shoes and your materials, once they start replacing leather—
Yeah.
In the mainstream.
It's true.
Younger generations who didn't grow up with leather.
Exactly.
And they will be absolutely stunned and
You're
horrified
correct.
That we're all wearing somebody's skin.
I know. And when you say it like that, that's so good.
Right.
You know? But it's like literally a body part. It's like an organ.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
And if you take the time to step back and really think about, that's someone's
and
skin.
And the selfishness, you know, when I was young, you know, I found PETA when I was like 12.
Of course you did.
And I think that there's so many kids like that now that just
there's
understand.
So many more.
Yeah, exactly. I think I was rare, but I think it's I haven't really met a young lady that isn't vegan or vegetarian lately.
And they're just much more conscious and awake. Mm-hmm. They really are.
in every way. I mean, that's what I always say too. They expect it to be, you know, vegan, yeah, or they expect it to be eco-friendly.
We do a gift guide every year. This year, there's real options. Like there, yeah, like, I mean, there have been, but the difference between a few years ago even, yeah, and now, but everybody is making vegan everything. Like everyone wants vegan everything.
It's true. You can go in a restaurant and not be a freak.
Yeah.
You can, you know, you could go on a date and someone's not going to think you're crazy.
Right. we also, in October, we do this vegan challenge and it's a 30-day challenge. And the majority of people who take it are not vegan at all. A lot of people that I hear from are like full-on meat eaters. So I got some emails saying, okay, this is great, but what about when someone invites me over for dinner, it's really awkward, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, you never apologize for not contributing to torture and suffering. You'd, yeah, be really grateful if somebody makes you something, obviously.
Yeah.
But don't, like we don't need to apologize. There used to be like, I'm sorry, I'm vegan. You know, like that was kind of, and now there's a huge pride. I'm not talking about me personally. I'm just talking about the whole movement.
It's true. You know, I mean, I'm going to have a brunch with a friend tomorrow. And he goes, where would be best for you to eat? You know, people, yeah, start to understand that, you know. But the thing is that I could eat anywhere.
Yeah.
I can go wherever he wants to go.
Now there is no problem.
And I know I can eat there. Yeah. So it's not like how it was. So
no.
It's exciting. It's cool. Really exciting.
It's cool. And what you're doing is like pushing it so much farther and like accelerating all of
it. And what you're doing is showing the whole world.
But it's happening. And that's like, it's definitely the best time, yeah, to be in this movement and, yeah, to be pushing it forward.
You know, I'll tell you, it feels a lot better than 22 years ago.
Peddling your vegan shoes. Yeah. I love that Zappos story.
I have such a sad story about peddling shoes. I came to New York and I had this horrible moment in the Big Apple. Bloomingdale's, they called me. I remember I was on a hike in LA and they called me. They're like, we want to see your shoes. We want to see all your shoes, all your samples. And I was like, oh my gosh, finally a buyer is ready to buy my shoes that is mainstream. And it's a major department store, you know? And I was like, I did it. So I took money, like, you know, last minute flight, last minute hotel, had to, you know, come over here and show them the samples back then. And so I came over and I had this meeting with them and they're like, they brought the whole office over. They wanted to show everyone. Everyone wanted to look at it and see what a vegan shoe looked like. And then they didn't buy this. You know, I think we're going to, you know, maybe buy in a few seasons. We're just not ready for vegan right now. And I walked out of there with this little cart with my shoes. I walked and walked and walked. I didn't even know where I was walking. I was just walking in New York. I was like, how could that happen? How could I come all the way here?
But the thing is with New York, when things are bad, they're way, yeah, worse than anywhere.
Yeah.
And when they're good, they're better than anywhere.
Gosh, right? You're so right.
But it really, when things are bad, it just hits you so hard in New York.
Yeah, it can really knock you.
Yeah.
I got knocked here.
But now you're here, mm-hmm, raising Series A.
Yeah.
You have this incredible,
yeah,
vegan materials. Like it's a totally—
Good to remember. It's
right?
Good to remember. Like, I remember that day very clearly. And there was nothing going to stop me.
It's your whole life. Rebecca, you're amazing.
I like you so much.
Thank you for this. I think we're going to be friends for a long time.
Yes, we are.
To learn more about Rebecca and about Mink, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you would like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Bethany Jones, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.